You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, for victims of domestic abuse, reliable transportation can be key to finding safety and independence. We'll hear about an auto repair shop in Appleton that's trying to make sure survivors have the working vehicles they need. First, you may not know it, but there's a robust fashion design program at UW-Madison, and for the past decade, many UW students have taken home awards at the YMA Fashion Scholarship Fund, the premier competition for gifted young fashion designers. One of this year's award winners joins us now in the studio. Adina Barrientos is a senior at UW-Madison and a 2018 YMA Fashion Scholarship Fund award winner. Adina, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us about this award, first of all.
It's a pretty well-known award in our major, but it's this amazing opportunity where students can kind of showcase everything they've learned throughout the major. They develop this case study where they get to create their own designs. They have a real life world application. Usually there's a different prompt every year from the scholarship. And so this year the prompt was creating and curating a new collection to help drive foot traffic into brick and mortar stores. So students can choose their own collection, choose their own company. You get to really look at the industry, what's happening now, and how your creativity can help a certain company improve those issues.
And we'll get into your plan in just a bit, but I think when people think of the fashion world, Wisconsin doesn't always come up at the top of the list, but Wisconsin students have been rocking it at this competition for a long time now, right?
Oh, yes. We have several students go every single year. We've had students get the scholarship. We've had students move on in advance to get even a larger scholarship. It is definitely really cool to go to New York and see all the different students there. But one thing that does stand out is that there's always a group of Wisconsin students congregating and having a great time because it's definitely something that we're known for.
So I've got your plan here for a line of clothing for Patagonia. So talk about what you were trying to do here.
Yeah, one of my biggest interests as a designer is working on sportswear and the functionality of sportswear. And one of the leading names in that industry is Patagonia. They're a company I've definitely admired for many years now. And when I got the opportunity to do the YMA scholarship, I thought this was the perfect place to put in everything I knew and really show my interest in the company and the people that that support the company. So I chose them because I wanted to work on sportswear, and I specifically wanted to work on children's wear. They have an amazing collection for all ages, but I did see a gap in the children's wear, noticing that there wasn't a huge variety. And so I saw that as my time to kind of jump in and create this huge collection for children to kind of bring build a loyalty from a really young age with this with the younger consumers so that they know Patagonia from a young age, they appreciate the wear and what the company's done for them, and then they'll keep the loyalty building throughout the years.
And when people think of fashion design, they might think of the high fashion stuff that you see on a runway and think, that's interesting, it's not practical, I would never wear it. You're trying to do something that's extremely practical that people will actually wear, right?
Yes, one of my biggest interests in design is the functionality that apparel can bring and how designing certain aspects of an apparel piece can actually improve the wearer's life. So that's a huge thing in outerwear, that's really important in sportswear, the type of materials you use, the way the piece is constructed, that all matters in the end use of the product, and that's why I really like functionality in the piece.
Adina Barrientos is with us, senior at UW-Madison, winner of a Fashion Scholarship Fund Award for this design we're talking about now. So Adina, let's talk about how we do this. You want clothes that kids are going to want to wear and that make them want to be out in nature, right?
Yeah, I love in children's wear how you can kind of break boundaries. It's not always about style. It's about how the child feels in it, what it excites them to do. So I kind of went even past that in this case study. I created a few designs that, for example, there's a legging that has little light up dots on the bottom ankles, and that's so it will glow in the dark when they go outside, and that's supposed to encourage them to explore the world at night. There's a rain jacket in there that changes colors when it gets wet. So that's supposed to show children that there's a whole world out there when it's wet outside. It's not just, you don't need a sunny day to enjoy the day. And so it kind of excites them, and it makes them explore the elements, gets them excited about nature, going outside and being part of that community.
Sometimes you say to a kid, oh, don't get those nice clothes dirty. You're not going to say that to a kid wearing these clothes,
no,
right?
These clothes are meant to get dirty. I specifically designed certain types of fabric on the knee area so that they can bend and You can get dirty, you can tear, and clothing does tear. So even though I specifically designed materials that are supposed to be extremely durable, there's also a patchwork collection involved with the case study. And that's in order to get children to understand that life goes on after a tear in a clothing, and that you can keep using your clothes. You don't have to throw them away once they tear. And children's clothing tears a lot. So the patchwork collection are little patches given out to the children at the stores to help them learn how to sew, first of all, but also get them involved in repairing their clothes.
I should point out to people that this is a hypothetical yes. clothing collection. Don't go out and try to buy it right now. The other part of your design is that the ingredients, the materials, I should say, are sustainable.
Yeah. So Patagonia already has a great initiative with their recycled and sustainable materials. I really want to emphasize this in this collection. So every single material that I have incorporated into this design has either recycled materials or is organic material. So we have organic cotton, we have recycled nylon, recycled polyester. And that's because I wanted this to be a collection where if you're buying the clothing, you're not just taking from the earth, but you're using what's already been made and that it's going into another life cycle to be used.
So how did you originally get into fashion design as a possible career?
Fashion design has always been a big interest of mine, but almost as a hobby when I was a child. It's something I like to just doodle around with, and I never thought I would make a career out of it. I came to UW not exactly sure what I wanted to do, and within the first semester, I took a class in one of the design classes at the School of Human Ecology. And just fell in love with design and thought to myself, why am I not doing what I love, what I've always loved? And realized that there really was a practical career out of it, especially in sportswear. That was the true passion of mine. And so everything kind of fell into place after taking that first class.
Now, for this scholarship award-winning proposal, you didn't actually make the clothes for it. But as part of your program here, are you actually not just designing stuff, but then going and making it?
Yes, we make a lot of clothes. That's not the most common thing at some programs across the country. But the program here at UW, we do have a huge emphasis on apparel construction and pattern making. So that way, we're not just designing clothes, but we also know what can be done or how new manipulation needs to be made in order to make your designs come to life. You really get that hands-on experience that not everyone gets, which I truly appreciate. And it's just great to see something that you designed has come to life.
And are you using really fancy state-of-the-art gear, or are you doing this really by hand? What's the range of technology you have to work with?
It's pretty impressive. We're using machines that I probably won't get the chance to ever purchase on my own. UW is great with supplying our studios with top-of-the-notch sewing machines, laser cutters. We've now broken into 3D printing, which has been awesome. So basically anything out there that's becoming really big in the industry. Our department has been really good at getting their hands on.
Do you and your colleagues in the department often make stuff that you then end up wearing yourself?
I would love to make things that I would like to wear. However, I'm trying to use as much time as possible to create something, one for my portfolio. Mm-hmm. And so usually only models will be wearing that in runways and photo shoots. I feel like if I wear it, it might get ruined. but sometimes I'm designing for contests or for customers, and that's when I'm not designing for myself. So maybe in the future I can focus a little bit more on something I want to wear.
Is there a secret runway facility somewhere on the campus that we don't know about?
There's not a secret facility, but there are some amazing student organizations and collaborations where we've put on different runways throughout the year. At the end of the year, there's always a fashion show for the entire department that is led by students and professors that takes place right at the end of April.
So you've won this scholarship award. You're a senior. What's the next step for you now in fashion design?
So I hope to move on into fashion design and working with the sportswear industry and outerwear. However, I'm in the middle of interviews, in the middle of figuring that all out. Hopefully some answers will be coming around soon. I'm just really excited to dive into the industry, and I really, no matter where I end up, I really want to learn more about what can be done and what needs to be done and use that experience to get where I need to go.
Well, Adina, good luck and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Adina Barrientos. She's a senior at UW-Madison and a 2018 YMA Fashion Scholarship Fund Award winner. Been talking about her experience in the textiles and fashion design program at UW-Madison. The auto shop isn't a place that most of us want to find ourselves at, but the car repair process can be especially negative for women. Jumpstart Auto Repair in Appleton is looking to change that by having a garage staffed entirely by female technicians. And that's just one part of the shop's mission. Jumpstart also benefits victims of domestic violence, making sure they have the transportation they need to stay independent, working with Harbor House and Christine Ann Domestic Abuse Services. Jenny Krakava is the development and marketing manager for Harbor House. Jenny, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be here.
And Katie Vanderwielen is the general manager of Jumpstart Auto Repair. Katie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And Jenny, let's start with you. Jumpstart's been in operation for a little over a year. How did the idea for an auto repair shop that pairs with domestic violence services get started?
Yeah, so we were invited to dream big back in 2013 and come up with a social innovation project and become eligible for some funding related to planning for something like that. So we looked at the survivors we work with, and lack of access to transportation can be a profound barrier to their economic independence. And so we thought, hey, that's something we could focus on. And as we explored the idea further, we thought, well, we have a great technical college in the area. Maybe they could come do some of these repairs. As we started looking into the auto repair business, we saw an opportunity to fill a need in the marketplace as well for the general public to serve women better in terms of the auto repairs they need. So we thought, let's open up our own auto repair business, and we can have a double bottom line with also a social mission that then all the proceeds from the general public goes into providing low to no cost repairs for the survivors that we work with at Harbor House and Christine Ann.
And Katie, can you talk about why female customers at an auto shop may not always have the best experience?
Well, I think they just are scared. They don't know enough about vehicles. And I think this goes both ways for men and for women. When you don't know, you have to put that trust into somebody. And I think it's easier for a female to trust another woman to give them honest answers and know that they're not going to get taken advantage of. They have actual proof out there that women are quoted higher than men when they call for estimates or get estimates for car repairs, and we just want to change that.
And talk about your experience as a woman working in auto repair. Has that been a challenge for you?
Oh, yeah, it's always been a challenge, but I grew up doing it. I've always been hands-on with my dad. I enjoy doing stuff like that, working with my hands, so it's been a challenge, but it's been something that I've wanted to do. So I just kept doing it.
And Jenny, can you talk about how Jumpstart connects car repair with victims of survivors of domestic abuse? How do you connect the two to help them meet their transportation needs?
Yeah, sure. So clients that are working with staff at Harbor House and Christine Ann are referred to Jumpstart for auto repair services. So if there's someone we're working with and they have an issue with their car and they're going to need it to make sure they get to work on Monday, we'll refer them over to Katie, and Katie and Jenna over at Jumpstart will get them all taken care of and safely on the road. What's been really interesting and rewarding to see is that we also are seeing Jumpstart as another referral channel for our agencies, because we've had people reach out directly to Katie, who are survivors, who've maybe never accessed our services before, but there are pieces and, you know, support groups and things that they can benefit. So Katie is then referring those folks our way as well. So it's this great two-way street.
And Jenny, people might not make a natural connection between being a survivor of domestic abuse and having important transportation needs. Why was that an important part of the equation?
Yeah, sure. So the number one reason someone will return to an abusive relationship is for economic reasons. And so if someone makes a decision, yep, you know what, I'm going to leave this relationship, it's in my best interest, but I need to become more economically independent, transportation is a huge piece of that, to get yourself to school, to advance your education, or just to get to jobs, interviews, appointments, your kids to childcare, whatever that might be. So by removing that, your success is much more insured by in those other areas.
Talking to Jenny Krakava with Harbor House and Katie Vanderwielen with Jumpstart Auto Repair, both in the Appleton area, talking about this effort to bring together help for domestic abuse survivors and car repair. And Katie, I understand that you do things a little differently. I don't just drop off my car with you necessarily and come back when it's done. You like to show people what you're doing.
We do. We take everybody out in the shop and show them what's going on with their vehicle, or a lot of times they'll call and say, I was told that I need front and rear brakes and it's going to cost me $600 or $800. and we recheck it, and we actually take them out there and show them, you know, your front brakes are here, your rear brakes are here. And even if you don't know anything about a car, Jenna is absolutely amazing at explaining how things work and what you really do need or don't need, or maybe how long yet we can get by without having to do that repair. Just put it in simple terms for anybody who doesn't know anything about it. We make them so they can understand what's going on.
And as I understand it, you like to, when you can, teach people to do maintenance on their own. So if they're in there for that oil change, they might come out of there knowing how to do the next one on their own.
Correct. We actually teamed up with the Appleton Public Library this year. On June 13th, we're holding a maintenance workshop. So we can talk about maintenance that needs to be done on their vehicles, show them how to change oil, but check your fluid levels and what to watch for, different lights that might come out of their dash and what they might mean. And I feel like if people are a little more knowledgeable, they're going to be a little bit less scared when those lights come on, or if they don't have washer fluid in their car, where do they fill it? My low coolant light comes on. What do I do now? Just take those things and make it easier for them so they don't feel so restricted.
And Jenny, this is an interesting and from where I'm sitting, kind of unique model. There's two nonprofit organizations, yours and your partner organization, but Jumpstart itself is a for-profit business. Talk about how this is all arranged to work the way it does.
It is. So we've been blazing some new trail here in Wisconsin with this model. But, yeah, so we are two nonprofits that do own an LLC, and we did that just to kind of keep the business separate from our two organizations. So this was kind of a risk going into it, but it's proving to be a really positive thing for our two agencies. And in addition to providing for the repairs for the survivors, looking at some projections we have into the future, we see some revenue streams for the two agencies as well. So really 100% of the proceeds going into Jumpstart are going back to help survivors of domestic abuse in our communities.
And Jenny, I understand one hope for this is that maybe Katie can encourage people to get into a car repair or a mechanical field like that, that maybe women wouldn't usually think of as a possible career path.
Yeah, we really see, you know, in terms of that economic stability and independence, non-traditional careers for women are really sustainable careers with good wages, good benefits, those kinds of things. And so the more we can lift up some of those opportunities, and if you can see it, you can be it. So if more women can really visualize themselves in those roles, we would love to be a part of encouraging that. And also, I have to mention our fantastic partnership with Fox Valley Technical College. We're currently operating out of their auto lab, and we would not be where we are without them and their support.
And Katie, do you see it as part of your role to maybe for some of your customers encourage them to pursue a career in being an auto mechanic or something like that?
Oh, definitely. We've actually been visited by a couple of groups of younger girls, empowering young girls to get them in and show them what's going on and what we're doing, and hopefully encourage more women to get into this field, and not only this one, but any non-traditional role. You know, there's machinists and it's limitless to what we can actually do out there when you have the resources and you know deep down that you can do this.
Jenny, can you talk about the reaction from some of the clients of your organization who have used the services of Jumpstart?
Yeah, it's been amazing. There's one case that comes to mind that I was getting my oil changed and had the chance to talk to this woman. She was going to job interviews, and she was still needing to rely on her abuser to get her to these job interviews, and would just get torn down on the way to these interviews and arrive crying, her confidence just, you know, going nowhere. And she was able to secure a vehicle. We were able to get her into Jumpstart, have the car looked at, make sure it was safe for her to drive. She was so grateful and just feeling the confidence that she was exuding and being able to have this independence and being able to go into that next job interview with the confidence she needed to secure that job and really find her own way ahead.
Katie, what's it like to be an auto technician and not just, you know, fix somebody's car, but fix their life and career in a way?
It's amazing. I've been working with automobiles and working in customer service for this for over 20 years, and I've never experienced anything like this. Jenny and I were having a conversation earlier. It's something as simple to me to fix a flat tire or change their oil or do something so simple to me and to know that I just changed a life. to know that they have somebody they can depend on whenever they need. In I think a lot of times you feel like you're going to ask a stupid question. They don't have to feel that way with me. We've all been there. They're not afraid to ask questions and feel like they don't have to be intimidated. It's amazing. It's just amazing what we're doing.
Jenny, this is in Appleton. I'm going to guess there's a couple people elsewhere in the state who maybe work in similar fields saying, hey, why don't we have something like that? What would be your advice if they wanted to get that started?
We would love that, because when we were starting Jumpstart, the word started getting out, and like, oh, you could help this, you know, this group of people or this group of people in need. And our feeling is, if more people would take on this idea, if an existing dealership would one day open a lane just to help folks who maybe need a little, you know, help out getting their vehicle back on track, so they can hold down a job, so they can get to school, it'd be awesome. We'd love to see more of it happening.
And Katie, what are your hopes for the future of Jumpstart?
Our hopes are hopefully we'll be in our own shop this summer, and working 5 days a week, and just keep helping. I mean, there's so much potential here with Jumpstart, not just in auto repair, but you know, there's so many things that we can do right along with this to keep helping our domestic violence survivors.
We'll leave it there for now. Katie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jenny, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Rob.
We've been talking to Jenny Krakava, Development and Marketing Manager for Harbor House, Wisconsin, and Katie Vanderwielen is the General Manager of Jumpstart Auto Repair at Appleton. The shop is staffed entirely by women, and it benefits survivors of domestic violence. Now, state Democrats are becoming increasingly hopeful for big gains in the November midterms. After the party flipped a state Senate seat in western Wisconsin that had been seen as safely Republican, Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Dallet won this week's state Supreme Court race. It was the first time a liberal candidate had won an open seat on the court in 23 years. That's on top of Democratic wins in parts of the country that went handily for Donald Trump in 2016. Governor Scott Walker tweeted a warning on Tuesday night that Wisconsin is on the verge of a blue wave this fall, which could spell trouble for his bid for a third term in office. A while back, we talked about the potential for a blue wave with former conservative radio host Jerry Bader. Now, former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist Eugene Kane says the people of Wisconsin have had enough of Walker and state Republicans. He is a regular contributor to The Week in Review on WPR's morning show. Eugene, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, tell us why you're feeling pretty good about the chance of a blue wave this fall.
Well, I had to couch that in terms of I actually am not feeling all that good. I mean, because politics is such a particular thing to try to, you know, predict. I think I'm optimistic. I don't necessarily think a spring election like this one just happened in Wisconsin with the state Supreme Court is that great of an indicator as what might happen later on. Although it's enough to get people encouraged, I think I understand, especially after following politics these last few years. I mean, look at what happened with Trump and Clinton. To try to go out on a limb and predict anything these days is pretty precarious. But I do think it's curious that the people talking about the blue wave are the GOP, the Republicans. Scott Walker used it in his tweet. And it's almost like he's given it more publicity than anybody else is. So now it might be a self-fulfilling prophecy that there is a blue wave. So that's something to look at.
I'm not going to try to pin you down to call how many seats will go one way or the other, but let's break down maybe pros and cons. First of all, four signs of that blue wave for big wins for Democrats in the fall. What are you seeing as signs pointing in that direction as a possibility?
Again, I look at nationally, there's a lot of excitement over the races that switched, you know, from red to blue. The places that had voted for Trump ended up unseating, you know, the challengers, and a lot of them were very, you know, highly publicized. Roy Jones, the one in Pennsylvania, I believe. My sense is that this is a very large country. So these isolated cases, they can be used as indicators, but until you get really large numbers, I would be wary of saying that that's a case, that's a sign of how everybody is going to go. But I do think there is definite movement from just a ground level of dissatisfaction in all the places that voted for Trump. And I don't think they're all real politically, not savvy, but I don't think these are all people who, like, live and breathe politics. They voted for Trump because they felt he would make their lives better and would, you know, maybe be an improvement. I think maybe his poor performance has hurt his credibility in those areas, which opens up, you know, a window of vulnerability for anybody who decides to run against a conservative or a Trump Republican.
I want to give a listen now to Governor Walker talking about some of his concerns and then the case that he hopes he thinks Republicans should be making. Here's a listen.
There are good things happening in the state. I think if we get that story out, people are going to respond. I think people want to vote for something, not against something. A lot of what I've heard in the last few months are what people are against. I think people want to hear what you're for. What are you going to do that's going to make life more positive for me and my family here in the state of Wisconsin? I think we got a great track record of accomplishing those things over the last few years and a great vision about where we're going to go going forward.
And Governor Walker has pointed to a historically low unemployment rate in Wisconsin as an example of that. Is that something that you think Republicans are going to be able to sell and maybe not be a victim of a wave, even if it's going on elsewhere in the country?
See, that's one of the puzzling things about Walker, in that he tries to tout his policies, but he tries to make it as though, well, nobody knows we're doing these things, which seems to me, if he were really doing things at a real, you know, effective level, there wouldn't be any question whether people's lives were being improved. I also think something like his jobs record, I've always been just curious to me that you keep hearing him talking about such low unemployment in Wisconsin, everybody has jobs, yet he pushes something like this draconian job drug testing program, which essentially seems like it wants to weed out people from getting jobs. And it makes you wonder, you know, why, if there's such low unemployment, why is he trying to make it harder for some people who, just due to their personal, like, weaknesses with something like marijuana or something, make it harder for them to get? It's just, I don't think he's really on the right track in a lot of his policies, and a lot of people see through that. I think they're asking the same questions I have about, if he's really such a successful governor, why is it particularly recently all we hear him doing is touting his record and comparing it to somebody like Tony Earl, who, my God, how many years has it been since Tony Earl was governor?
Talking to Eugene Kane, former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist, looking at the prospects for a big Democratic wins in Wisconsin this fall. He says he sees some positive signs. Not betting big amounts of money on it, though. Still a lot of time between now and Election Day. You can join in with your thoughts, hopes, and fears for Wisconsin elections this fall at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Cindy is with us in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, I don't think Walker's taking enough credit for his unpopularity. I mean, our environment, since he's taken over, has just gone to heck in a handbasket. I know they're trying to sell this Foxconn as a great deal, but most of the citizens of Wisconsin are not buying it. Our education system's taking a hit. They're picking on the poor all the time. Our roads are going to heck. I mean, the list just goes on and on. He's just done, I think he's done more damage to the state, and I'm hoping that the people of Wisconsin are finally waking up and smelling the coffee.
Cindy, thanks for the call. And Eugene, that's some of what you were talking about there with the enthusiasm on the Democratic side and maybe frustration with Governor Walker's series of wins along the way.
Well, I think, who is it, Cindy? I think she nailed it right there. I mean, my frustration with people who still want to try to convince you that Walker is doing such a great job, they point to things like Foxconn, which, I mean, I'm one of these people who really still does not believe it's going to be as many jobs as they promised. I think there's no real need to gloat about it right now if you're a Republican, because all it's doing is taking money out of Wisconsin's pocket. To this date, there's really no real sign that with Foxconn is going to be a boon for the average Wisconsin worker, because I don't think anybody has even gotten a paycheck from Foxconn yet as a worker. maybe as a consultant or a higher up, they probably have all been paid. But, I mean, the attitude that it's going to be 13,000 jobs, I mean, I've heard things like because there's going to be automation and robotics in Foxconn, I mean, it might never get to be 13,000. So, and she points out the things that he's been so hurtful in terms of education. He gives a bunch of money back in education in his last budget, but that's only to kind of mask the fact that he took so much from education in the first place. He gave a little bit of money back to Obamacare, healthcare network in Wisconsin, but that eliminates the fact that he's still, you know, trying to work to hurt Obamacare recipients. So that's a dissatisfaction I think is coming out that will lead to whatever kind of blue wave people are predicting.
In that clip we played from Governor Walker, he said people want to vote for something, not against something. We heard Cindy there, and we've heard others definitely critical of Scott Walker. But do Democrats, you think, Eugene, have something that they're, you know, making the case for? That do they have a positive message to get people to vote for them?
Well, clearly, you can't just do anybody but Walker, because that's always a trip in any election. It just base your whole campaign on just not this guy. But I do think where Walker has gone wrong, and I think is a valid criticism, most of his statements, like this anger and hatred tweet that I'm sure you've been talking about that he did in response to the loss in the state Supreme Court, that's sort of like a message that, well, anybody who isn't voting for Republicans or the GOP, you guys are all angry or hateful. And that's toxic in my mind, and you just got to get away from that. But yet, that's where he's at now. That's his latest statement on this. He thinks anybody against him is motivated by anger or hatred. And again, to your initial question, I don't think we can just vote against him as a matter of fact without offering something more positive. But clearly anything would be more positive than saying that anybody who's against you is motivated by anger or hatred.
We're talking to Eugene Cain about whether Democrats are poised for big gains in the fall midterms. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Wisconsin is on the verge of a blue wave, big Democratic gains this fall? Would that be good news or bad news as you see it? If you're a Democrat, are you feeling motivated to vote? If you're a Republican, how about you? Call in at 800-642-1234. And how do you feel about Governor Walker's chances of reelection, Tammy Baldwin's chances of reelection? What's going to happen in the state legislature along the way? And does Donald Trump enter into the equation here? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. We're talking about the potential for a blue wave election this fall with Eugene Cain. He's a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see Democrats winning big this November in Wisconsin, or do you think Republicans can make a case that they should hang on to power in the state? Will Governor Walker be reelected? Do you think people should be talking about Donald Trump, Republicans or Democrats in this, or should we be focused on the state? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Richland Center. Jim, hi.
Yeah, hi. How are you, gentlemen?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Jim?
I want to bring up the fact that, well, I'm a 73-year-old white man, an old white man. The reason I bring up the fact that I'm white is that before being governor, Walker was the executive of Milwaukee County, and now he's governor. Effectively, he's been in charge of Milwaukee County for over the past decade. During that time, Wisconsin has been labeled as the worst state out of all 50 to raise a black child. Milwaukee County has some horrific statistics. Over 40% of children in Milwaukee County are below the poverty level. One out of five children in Milwaukee does not know if and when their next meal is coming. I want to know what this man has done for minorities and poor people across the state. I'm basically ashamed of the state to have this type of a label. That's not the way I was raised. I don't think that's the way most Wisconsin people think.
Jim, thanks for the call. There's a lot going on behind that story, but probably hard to for anybody to put that all on one person. But that said, Eugene, what do you think of Governor Walker when it comes to people of color and racial disparities in the state?
Well, I actually covered Scott Walker when he was Milwaukee County executive, which led to his rise to being governor. And I think that he was always perceived as kind of aloof in the black community, and that he wasn't really someone you could go to for any, you know, African-American causes unless he saw something that was in it for him. And even afterwards, you couldn't really get him to commit to anything. So I understand what the caller is talking about. And I understand that there are a lot of white people who don't think that you can be that aloof from the black community. But essentially, because the GOP in Wisconsin has let themselves be, you know, perceived in this niche. I mean, just look at the number of, you know, GOP black elected officials are there. Are there any? I'm pretty sure there's some. I think I've met a few. But, I mean, that's no surprise that a party with very little African-American participation or African-American membership would not be someone that's trying to actively improve the situation for a lot of African-Americans. And Walker, the problem is that in Wisconsin, even though I live in Milwaukee and other people live in Madison and that are more diverse communities, there's a lot more of there's a lot more of this state that is predominantly white, which doesn't mean that they're racist or anything, but they don't have much interaction with minorities. So in a lot of ways, they don't see minorities' interests as being high on their priority list. And it's not that much different from a whole lot of other states in this country. And it's one of the things we have to continue to try to deal with. Remember that just because you don't see a lot of minorities around you in your community, there are still policies and things like that, which we all really have in common, to tell the truth, that need to be addressed. So I think I understand what he's saying, but I mean, Walker, I don't necessarily see him as changing anytime soon.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to John on the line in Janesville. John, hi.
How are you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, John?
I think it's kind of funny when he brings up the fact that he's created all these good-paying jobs, but they aren't good-paying jobs. They're beginner jobs. They're like 17 an hour, 16 an hour jobs. To raise a family, you have to be in the 30s, up to 34, 35 an hour plus benefits. None of the jobs that he's offering give much for benefits either. So why are people supposed to be happy with a $16 and $17 an hour job? Maybe unemployment is low, but you can't live on it.
John, thanks for that call. Eugene, this is a problem not just in Wisconsin, wages not going up quickly, but do you think there's something to what John's saying?
Oh, see, I think that the biggest misconception in this country is the attitude that, you know, everybody should just be happy to get whatever job they can get. Where, you know, I don't know if it's my personal perspective on life, but I think you should look to get something that makes you happy, can earn you enough to feed your family and support your family or even just support yourself. And, I mean, there's a lot more to life than just working a job that, you know, pays the minimum or does the minimum. And government can help a lot in that because, unless we forget, this is an awfully rich country. This is a country that has enough money to help everybody out. So, yeah, I understand what he's saying, and I think that's an essential dilemma in America today. When Walker touts all these jobs, he's talking about a lot of jobs that, frankly, a lot of Americans, they will settle for, but those are not the jobs that they're looking to make their dream of American life come true. And it's hard for people to accept that, but that's simply the way it is.
Thanks for the call, John. We're talking to Eugene Kane, a former columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at the possibility of a blue wave election in Wisconsin in November. Eugene, before we go back to our callers at 800-642-1234 in that race for governor, what, about 30% of registered Democrats in the state are currently running for governor. Right, I'm exaggerating a little. There's a big pool of candidates. Do you think Democrats are going to get somebody they can rally behind?
I don't have a whole lot of confidence in that because I've been in the state for a while and don't they see Democrats as having the right formula to pick in a person who is not only just popular but makes sense for a lot of people and a lot of political parts of the spectrum. But my attitude is that there's some time left, and if Walker blows it by, you know, not realizing why they are starting to lose a lot of races, he can get swept up in this blue wave, which really he would be the bluest wave of all if we could get him out of there. But, you know, at this point, I don't have a candidate in mind, which kind of makes me feel kind of risky because you really would want to have at least more than one solid candidate in mind, regardless of how, you know, soon or far away the next election is. So I don't know. I don't feel confident that they'll be able to get him, but I have confidence Walker might screw it up by himself.
Back to our callers now. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to say I think the Foxconn deal is going to come back to bite Republicans, and the reason I think so is traditionally in the state of Wisconsin there's been a dynamic of the northern part of the state, mainly white, more conservative areas versus the southern, southeast portion of the state that's more urban, Madison and Milwaukee. The people in the northeast portion of the state are looking at that Foxconn deal, over $4 billion, and they're saying, how are those jobs going to affect me in the northeast portion of the state? It's one of the reasons conservatives in this state have been resistant to spending money to help Milwaukee is because of that dynamic.
And John, I'm going to jump in because we're just about out of time. Eugene, briefly, do you think Foxconn will help or hurt Republicans in the election?
Well, my belief is that it's a bad deal because exactly what the caller was talking about. It's like they gave up too much for a promise of jobs that may not even materialize. So I think Foxconn will bite them real bad, even though I'm like everybody else. I hope there are good jobs for people where they can raise their families. I just don't think they came up with the deal for it this time. So I agree with the caller.
Eugene, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for the invitation, man. Thanks a lot.
That's Eugene Kane, former columnist from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, regular contributor to the Week in Review on Wisconsin Public Radio's morning show. We talked to him about a potential blue wave in this fall's midterm elections here in the state. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll check out changes to the U.S. Census. Our guest says some of the controversial changes in the works could ultimately hurt red states around the country. We'll look back at the movie 2001: A Space Odyssey 50 years after it was released. Our guest says it's still worth watching, talking about, and thinking about. And on this week's edition of Food Friday, we'll talk to the author of The Runner's Cookbook, who has advice on how to cook for healthy nutrition to fuel your exercise program, or possibly advice on how to cook while running. I have to take a closer look at the book. We'll let you know that for sure tomorrow. That and look at some of the top news of the day. It's coming up here on Central Time.